You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 273 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carzino.
And we are coming to you this week in different locations.
I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Seattle Storm.
Wow. Is this our new introduction if we're in different places?
This is our new introduction. For the first time in my life, I have a permanent Seattle address, even though I've actually had a Seattle address the entire time, but haven't been in the city of Seattle.
The first time in your life that you have had an address that wasn't in Boulevard Park. It doesn't feel good to be back in Boulevard Park, Washington.
No, I mean, you were never back in Boulevard Park. Well, not for a while. We haven't recorded there in a very long time, but we're not going to be going forward, I guess.
I'm always back in Boulevard Park, Washington.
Oh boy. Well, it's going to be an interesting one. This week's beer is, we did not organize ahead of time because it's NBA free agency and I've had no time to prepare. So we're just drinking whatever we have around. What do you have?
Well, I obviously have to have the beer that matches my background here. And that is a cool frosty Rainier.
Let me screenshot that too. That's real nice. Yeah. I am drinking a Johnny Utah Pale Ale from our friends at Georgetown Brewing. So feeling good about having that on hand.
There we go. We got to hit up Georgetown Brewing to be a sponsor.
Yeah, I mean, that would be awesome. We don't do a lot of Georgetown beer on the pod because of the fact that like their special release type beer, they just do growlers, and that's a little more difficult for us than doing the 22 ounces or even a four pack or something. So
we can figure it out.
I'm sure we could. Yes, if they were in fact a sponsor, you should get on that.
Okay, thank you. I did friggin' Peltoncast work this week.
Okay, I've guess got we're some horrible
news
that.
For you. No, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I will say that booking became a lot more complicated in the last couple of weeks because of the old DV.
Yeah. But yeah, understandably so. Well,
still save the date, September 18th, by hook or by crook.
That date is being saved. I got some horrible news tonight, which is that Smith will not be able to join us for the Talking Taco Time segment.
Canceled.
not canceled. Because let me tell you, one of the most exciting things in Talking Taco Time history is happening imminently, within hours of this recording. I anticipate discussing it at Peltoncast Live, wherever we host that.
Wow.
Maybe in your backyard. Wow.
Where is Chris going to be?
He is going to a wedding in Spokane. Which
canceled the wedding.
We are not going to a wedding in Spokane. That is also that.
Yeah, that's pretty strange. Wait, he's going to a rival wedding in Spokane.
I don't know if I would consider it a rival wedding. I don't think that they're competing with each other in any sense.
If there are two weddings in a city on the same day, they are rival weddings, especially
different
if that's
days.
In Spokane.
Oh. His is on Sunday. The one that we are not attending is on Saturday, same day. I mean, if it were on Sunday, it might go. So, should we get to our toasts?
Absolutely, we should.
Let's start
We've now discussed where our friend is going to be in September.
Fifth Talking Taco Time co-host? But he's actually one of the Talking Taco Time co-hosts. He's just Talking Taco Time co-host. First off, to UW product Kelsey Plum for helping the USA to the inaugural gold medal in 3x3 women's basketball as part of the USA's four-player squad. Excellent result for Kelsey Plum and company there. So very exciting to see. Next up,
I would say for all of history, look, I mean, how long have the Olympics been going on for? Thousands of years? Literally every single women's 3x3 event, the U.S. has dominated.
That's true. Every single event has included Kelsey Plum on the gold medal winning team. 100%.
Yes.
All right, next up, to a record 6 Sounders. Named to the MLS All-Star team, all of them for the first time. Nuhu, Joao Paulo, both Alex and Christian Roldan,
Wow.
Raul Ruiz Diaz, and Yaimar Gomez Andrade selected for the 28-player roster chosen by a combination of fan player and media vote that will take on a team of Liga MX star all-stars.
There's going to be frequent subbing if it's a 28-player roster.
There usually is, and not everyone gets in there.
Rui Diaz has never been an MLS All-Star before.
That was shocking,
that
wasn't
possible?
It? I mean, he's always been among the leading scorers in the league. I don't know.
And they have 28 players on this team. It's not that small of a roster.
Right. It's not an exclusive club, necessarily.
I disagree with that. He's been an All-Star before.
He's been an All-Star in your heart. Christian and Alex Roldan, the first time ever that two brothers are part of the same MLS All-Star game. And I would say that, you know, right up there with the Fabulous Pelton cast is the best brother duos in Seattle
Absolutely.
Sports.
Absolutely.
Next up, we're pouring one out for Henry Weinhard's Private Reserve, one of several brands that Miller Coors announced this week are being discontinued.
We might have some responsibility here.
Oh, for not drinking it ever?
Yeah. When was the last time you remember drinking a Henry Weinhardt?
Well, I have a specific memory of drinking it in like 2006. So it's been a minute.
Was I with you?
No. This was at a party at someone else's house.
That is like, I'm not surprised that it's being discontinued.
It feels like Henry's was like, it was a notch above domestic beers in the 90s. And then the craft brew craze happened. And it was a notch below all of those, and it got kind of stuck in the bad middle to be in.
Yes.
An unhappy medium.
Yes. I'm sure they'll have it at one of those two weddings in Spokane, or they won't. That's
they
like
won't.
where you drink a Henry Weinhardt. If you happen to find yourself at a wedding and that's it.
Or at an uncle's house, there's like a decent chance. It's that or a Kirkland Signature beer.
Yeah, the Costco beer.
Kirkland Signature does a lot of fine products. I don't know that the beer, that might not be it.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Does it actually taste bad?
It doesn't taste better than other beers that I could drink.
We're all just drinking branding over here. It's like when Chris, I don't know if you talked to Chris about his trip to Austin, and he was like, Lone Star is just the best beer. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, you also. Tastes the same. Like, it tastes great because it's Rainier, and also you're in Texas. I understand. I get that. But we're drinking the can over here.
We're drinking the vibes is actually what we're drinking.
That's
and
true.
Lone Star has some pretty awesome vibes. All right, let's wrap up with some sad news. As former UW and Washington State women's basketball coach June Doherty died at age 64. Doherty coached the Huskies for 11 seasons from 1996 through 2007, reaching the NCAA tournament 7 times and the Elite Eight in 2001, when UW also tied for a conference title for the 5th and most recent time in program history. After being fired by UW in 2007, Doherty crossed the state to coach in Pullman for 11 seasons, guiding the Cougars to the WNIT 3 times after they had not previously appeared in the postseason since 1991. All right, well, we're bringing back this week one of my favorite segments, one of your favorite segments, and that's listener email that I received shortly before the podcast, just this evening from friend of the pod, Michael Jeremiah.
I say I'm very excited about this. I love listener emails more than anything.
Exactly. Hi, Kevin and Tristan. You've mentioned before how people who moved away from the area like listening to the pod is a dose of Seattle. I've been in that boat while living in Portland. Portland is obviously a nice place with screen door fried chicken, drivable In-N-Out, and Bill Oakley food reviews. After 6 Absolutely. Years, though, I have to say it pales in comparison to Taco Time Northwest wherever you go in the Rolodex of food reviews provided by the Peltoncast search for Seattle's best. Also, In-N-Out is kind of bad at times, especially when you're idiot in Kaiser. Anyway, I'm moving back to Seattle this month and wanted to take the time to thank you both for helping stay connected to the area while I was away 180 miles in a culturally similar city, but still, it has been greatly appreciated. I'm excited to be a local loyal listener moving forward.
And that's from?
Mike Jeremiah.
Oh, our good friend, Mike Jeremiah.
Yeah, that's what I said. Okay. Fairwood Zone, right?
That's huge. That's really big.
I mean,
my first bit of advice for him moving back to Seattle is to not go to the Azels in Fairwood.
I mean, he may have actually been there. I think his family may still be in Fairwood. I feel like we're bringing back the Pelton Cast listeners slowly but steadily. We got Chris Wheeler back a couple last year. Now Mike Jeremiah. Hopefully some others keep coming back. Just in time potentially for Pelton Cast Live, assuming it happens.
That's huge. A lot of people give credit to being able to work at a distance because of the pandemic. You know how we viewed office spaces. Maybe people don't need to be as centralized in cities. But I think it makes a lot more sense globally, nationally, and especially regionally to credit the Pelton Cast with that.
Yes. We are behind this trend 100%. Correlation is causation.
Well, very excited for you moving back, Mike Jeremiah. That was the thing. He was talking kind of negatively about Portland, and I get why now. As somebody who's from Seattle, went to Portland for a period of time and then came back. It's like, okay. Yes,
I understand. Just by contrast to Seattle, of course. Although I don't know if you agree about the In-N-Out and Kaiser sometimes being bad.
I agree with In-N-Out sometimes being bad.
Yes.
In-N-Out is not foolproof. And the thing is, In-N-Out, given how long you have to wait for it, the standards are pretty high. So.
Yeah.
I guess to transition, I was in LA last week, and it was a situation where LA is obviously readily available, or In-N-Out is obviously readily available in LA, but I only have so many food choices. And now, having gone to the In-N-Out Kaiser a couple of times, including a couple of times within the last couple of weeks, it was like, I don't need to go to In-N-Out now. If I could have just stopped in, it would have been like a 5-minute total experience, similar to Dick's, where you can just go up to the window, get your burgers, and go. Maybe I do it, right? Maybe I stop by late night or something like that. But as it is, the standards are, they have to be pretty high if you're going to commit to it for a period of time. You're committing like the amount of time that you would have to do for a sit down meal to a burger, which is going to be a little bit hit or miss, I guess is what I'm saying.
Any notable places that you did visit while you were in LA?
I had a lot of very good meals in LA. But I think the most notable was actually a meal I didn't have. So I get on, you seem perplexed.
I didn't know this was the direction we were going.
I get in on Wednesday morning, right? And immediately I have a meeting that's happening in the Atwater neighborhood at a place called Dune, Mediterranean food, supposed to be incredible, right? Everybody who I've heard talk about it has raved about Dune. So end up getting there, end up beating the person who I'm going to be meeting with. The plane gets in early or whatever. It's such a short flight from Seattle to LA. By the way, my first flight in 2 years, incredible. Air travel. Oh, it's a beautiful thing, air travel.
Wow. I hope I feel the same way after I'm taking my first flight in, I guess that's what, 17 months, coming up on Sunday to go down to Summer League?
So end up beating the person there. So I text them, right? And I'm like, so end up seeing that Dune is actually closed for renovations for the weekend, right? And I'm walking around and go to a coffee shop beforehand to wait. And there's a little taco window, right? Like it's cut out into a wall. I'm walking along and it's like, I bet those tacos are fucking incredible. And then there was another place where it just said on the sign, Cuban food. And I was like, okay, Dune is closed. What do I want right now? This taco window or the place that just has a sign that says Cuban food, right? Like those are top picks in the draft. That's 1 and 2, right? That's Odin and Durant right there. Like it's tough to choose between the two. So I text the person that I was going to
meet. That's the 1-2 you went with? I mean, I agree that they were both great prospects, but I don't know that that's how people conceive of the Odin draft, Durant draft in hindsight.
Who would you have gone with? LeBron and Darko?
Shaq and Alonzo Mourning.
Shaq and Zoe, you're going that far back. Anyway, you don't need to correct it when I have the perfect metaphor.
Okay.
So I text the person that I was gonna meet, and it's just like, hey, it looks like Dune is closed for renovations. There's this taco spot out of a window like a block away, which looks really great. There's also this Cuban food place. Shows up or whatever, and he's like, oh, let's just eat at this restaurant that's next door. And so we eat at that restaurant. The food was hyper okay. In fact, I have to say it was probably the worst meal that I've had the entire trip. And then
super okay.
The person who I'm meeting with is like, oh yeah, those tacos are incredible. And I literally go to every, it's different. The reason we didn't go there in defense was because that's a taco window and we're having like a sit down meeting, basically.
Right.
Like there are situations for different foods. I get that. But at the same time, I pride myself on being the type of person who can turn any type of food into a business relationship. or I don't know if that exactly makes sense. But every single person who I saw after that commented on how good those tacos were at that spot.
What's the name?
It's called Tacos Via Corona. I cannot say if they were good because I did not have them. But it was like, wow. I went to dinner later that day at a taco spot that was touted as maybe the best tacos in all of LA, at a spot called Salazar, which was phenomenal tacos. And we were sitting at Salazar, and the person that I was with was talking about how good the Tacos Via Corona tacos were. And I could have had them. And you know what? I fucking vibed it out. It was like, you could just see how good those tacos were.
You Let did me the vibe sure, yeah,
Tacos
check.
Via Corona. That's just, and you could, sometimes, the thing is, you could just feel it. Sometimes you see a place and you're like, you know that those tacos are going to be incredible. And granted, most tacos in LA are incredible.
Did you talk to anyone? Did anyone know about the Cuban place?
Cuban food?
Yeah.
I don't know. No, nobody brought up the Cuban place.
Okay.
We honed in mostly, but I'm sure it's incredible.
We'll have to try to check that out at some point if I get back to LA.
Tacos Via Corona?
It's been a while.
And then I had some other, I had a lot of very good tacos. I would say Salazar, the tortillas at Salazar, they were obviously freshly handmade and they were very gooey. They were pretty incredible. I really enjoyed that whole experience. I don't know if they're the best tacos in LA, but Sonora Town is it's a pretty tough one to beat for me. But it's tough. What's the location of Salazar?
Yep.
Wow, you're really pushing me here. of knowing where things are.
Oh no.
It's right next.
Tristan's...
I could I tell you the neighborhood? That's a tough question. It's right next to Zebulon. In fact, it was actually really funny. I was telling the person, what is that neighborhood? I guess maybe they call it Frogtown. Frogtown Brewery is right there.
Hmm. Okay.
Sort of Silver Lake area. But Salazar is more of like a sit-down type. Yeah, that's Silver Lake. It's more of like
that
a sit-down
doable
type.
At some point.
Talk. Oh, it was excellent. It's all outside, very nice patio and stuff. I thought that was great. But yeah, no, the person who I was meeting with was like, they were asking where we were having dinner later. And I was like, oh yeah, Salazar. And they were like asking further questions. And I was like, this is all I can offer. I was like, yeah, it's in the east side. And then they were like asking more questions. And I'm like, I've hit the wall of what I can answer geography wise. I was really fit. I was like, yeah, it's in the, you know, the east side. Yeah, it's pretty east. Yeah.
It's in LA. Los Angeles.
Like, you know, that east side.
Well, should we talk about some Seattle food real quick?
Absolutely, we should. Wait, are you going to do this without me eating it?
I am going to do this without you eating it. We have to. The search must go on because we have to go to the knockout stages.
This is bullshit.
Of the search. And you, well, I competed my hardest. I got to Mr. Chicken before tonight's Sounders game, and you didn't get to Mr. Chicken. You didn't get anywhere. So Mr. Chicken opened earlier this summer in the Seattle's International District. It's located just east of Lumen Field, for the record, serving Korean-style fried chicken.
I thought we had a
pact
for neither of us to go and neither of us to talk about it.
I didn't agree to that pact.
We had a pact.
So they don't have, like, other than drumsticks and wings, bone-in fried chicken. And that's my thing is, I'm not sure I'm convinced this is really a contender for Seattle's best fried chicken as a result of that. I feel like you got to be more fried chicken-y to really be eligible. But that being said, I ordered the Yangnyeom chicken, which is boneless thighs, went with the hot, which wasn't particularly hot. It was definitely a Seattle level of hot, I would say. I didn't have any water because, you know, I was walking to the game and didn't have anything. And it was still okay for me to eat, although it was extremely messy to eat as I was walking into Lumen Field. And I definitely looked like a hot mess by the end of it because of the sauce that was on there. And I would say it was quite delicious. It's, you know, kind of more like popcorn-y chicken of chicken thigh. So would definitely recommend checking it out, even if I don't think it will advance to the knockout stages of our search for Seattle's best chicken. Are you just under protest here? You're not going to say anything?
I haven't had the chicken. What do you want me to say? Do you think that it's not advancing because it's not in your terms fried chicken-y enough?
Yes.
Or because of the quality?
I mean, if we were going to compare that to, you know, similar items at other places that are in the tournament, I think it would probably do just fine. So
you have a rating for Mr. Chicken?
Let's go 91.
Okay. I still want to eat Mr. Chicken. That's really my problem.
First off, no one is stopping you except your 10 to 15 children. They are stopping you.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things.
Oh.
Fairwood, Washington, 10 to 15 children, pandemic. I got all sorts of stuff stopping me.
Your job. So here's a tentative bracket for the knockout stages, which will begin next week. So we got to get on.
God.
I got to jump on eating because I have to eat two fried chicken at two different locations before I head to Summer League on Sunday.
Wow. Are we taking a week off? That's usually your Summer League. Summer League is usually the bye week for the Pelton cast.
We can't afford to because of the bracket. We got
no bye weeks,
schedule.
Baby. No, there's 17 week schedule here for the Pelton cast.
I mean, first off, we didn't do a bye week the last time I was at Summer League. Last time I interviewed Barnwell, you took a bye week, as a matter of fact. But I didn't.
You interviewed Barnwell for half of an episode.
There was a second half? Okay.
I don't think that was it. I don't know. Maybe it was.
I definitely know we recorded one night after I went to, I think it was after I went to the Caesars Buffet. Then we recorded after that. Good times. Okay, so based on the combined ratings from the two of us, here's how the bracket looks going into the knockout stages. The number one seed, Cookies Country Chicken. The number two seed, Maono.
Okay.
The number three seed, D&E Pioneer Square. The number four seed, Heaven Sent Fried Chicken. The number five seed, Fats Chicken and Waffles. Number six seed, ST Hooligans, which we had just last week. The number seven seed, Quick Pack Food Mart. And then the number eight seed, Simply Soulful. So if we start going with the 1-8 matchup, I don't know, we may have to rethink exactly how we're going to do this or what the pairings are going to be. But one of those matchups will definitely be next week, suffice it to say. We'll have to figure out exactly which one. I think we might want to go Maono since it's relatively near me in West Seattle.
Maono versus Quick Pack?
Yeah, that would be that matchup.
That to me is, I mean, a 2-7, that's a dangerous matchup for Maono.
It is.
Wow.
You love you some Quick Pack. And dude, this time, I'm going to call ahead and make sure there's a thigh waiting for me.
Wow.
Since we've determined it's the king of the meats.
The king of the meats. We really have gotten places with this search for the Seattle's best fried chicken. If you would have asked me back in whenever we started this calendar year 2020, I would not have told you that the thigh was the king of the chicken meats.
I wouldn't have told you that a place needed to have fried chicken to have Seattle's best fried chicken. Bone-in fried chicken is the real winner of our search for Seattle's best fried chicken. So stay tuned for that knockout tournament, which potentially will conclude at PeltonCast Live.
It either will or it won't.
It's always 50-50. Should we turn our attention to Seattle sports?
Absolutely, we should.
Let's start with the Kraken, who had a busy week in free agency with some of that cap space they saved up, going relatively younger and cheaper in the expansion draft. The most notable signing for the Kraken, perhaps a bit of a surprise, although it was something that Third Pelton brother Randy Cote, our Kraken correspondent, kind of alluded to last week in our discussion ahead of free agency coming out of the expansion draft. They signed goaltender Philip Grubauer away from the Colorado Avalanche with a 6-year, $35.4 million deal. Grubauer finished third in voting for the Vezina Trophy last year that goes to the NHL's best netminder. He won the 2018 Stanley Cup with the Washington Capitals. And the inevitable comparison is going to be Marc-Andre Fleury, who was that veteran goaltender presence in the net for the Vegas Golden Knights when they came into the league. And similarly, the Kraken building around an experienced, accomplished goaltender.
Interesting.
Also signed a couple of forwards, inevitably, because that was a position they went relatively light on in the expansion draft, where they focused much more on the defense. Jaden Schwartz from St. Louis comes over on a 5-year, $27.5 million deal. He's more of a center. And then left winger Alex Wenberg on a 3-year, $13.5 million deal. Schwartz, another former Cup winner with the Blues. He's played in his entire career there. Someone who, you know, has been very highly regarded. Maybe the statistical production hasn't quite been there. Wenberg looks like he's got a chance, I think, to be a better value in some ways when you look at that lower price per year, shorter contract, but has been pretty productive the last few years.
Yeah, what are in NHL, what are big numbers for a player? What is the max that a player hits?
Oh, these are great questions. I don't know that I'm prepared to answer them, so I'm going to have to do some Googling here.
I mean, this number for Philip Grubauer, 6 years, $35 million, it doesn't seem like a lot of money, thinking about it in terms of, say, NBA standards or something like that.
Sure. I think part of it is that, you know, I think, did we talk about this last week, that the goaltenders tend to be fairly random in their production. And as a result of that, teams don't spend as much on goaltenders as they do overall. But also, I mean, the salary cap is lower than it is in the NBA.
Are they guaranteed contracts?
I think generally, yes.
Okay. So this is NBA style. Philip Grubauer is going to be getting paid this money for 6 years.
I think so.
Whether it's by the Kraken or not. That's a long time to commit to a goalie.
It is. You know, they tend to play relatively later. So that's, you know, makes it a bit safer. It looks like the cap's around $80 million this year. So, you know, by contrast, the NBA cap is $112 million. And obviously there's only 15 players on an NBA, you know, full roster, as opposed to, I think it's 23 in hockey. So
this is a significant amount of money here.
The Kraken now are paying the fifth most to goaltenders of any team in the NHL.
Okay.
Because of course, they signed Chris Dredger to a fairly big contract when they drafted him in the expansion draft. And it looked like he might be the starter, but then they go out and make this play for Grubauer. Their defensive spending is on the lower end, 24th in the league, according to Spotrac. And their forward spending, very low right now, also 24th.
Okay.
So that, you know, we're getting pretty close to the first roster here. I don't know how many changes we have going forward. They did make a trade after that decision because they drafted three goaltenders in the expansion draft, and they traded Vitek Vanacek back to the Washington Capitals, from whom he had been drafted for a 2023 second round pick. So we have no Mariners hot takes this week, I take it? I was expecting to hear some Kendall Graven vitriol after the Mariners traded him, and people were angry, legitimately angry.
Well, I was going to say, similar to the Seattle Mariners, I did absolutely nothing.
Oh, no.
I don't know if I have Kendall Graven hot takes, because I kind of can see the situation from all perspectives. Right, to talk seriously about this, and I hate talking seriously about the Mariners, but
you said that we needed to do it 2 weeks ago. You talked about the Gold Cup.
You're taking the hot takes as, you're not supposed to take them as facts. Hot takes are just things you say. You don't follow up on them. But I think the most important, I think fans were very upset at the Mariners for not making any moves at the deadline.
Well, and not I think making they felt, more moves. They did get Diego Castillo as a replacement for Graveman.
Oh.
I mean, what? Being, you, This is the dumb thing about this, is it's like relievers. You didn't have feelings about Kendall Graveman 3 months ago.
But I think there's sort of two ways to view it, which is A, they're relievers. Anytime that you can trade a reliever for a solid position player, you should do that. Understanding positional value within baseball. The amount of time that one player is on the field versus another is, I don't believe in leverage times. That's not something that I believe in. However, I think that people get, you don't agree with that?
I do think there's such a thing as leverage of situations. Yes. But I don't think that the leverage of the situation is Kendall Graveman's been in this season.
Innings are what matter. Yeah.
I don't think the leverage of the situations Kendall Graveman has been in makes his 33 innings of pitching lights out baseball any more predictive going forward. You know what his career ERA was coming into this year?
What?
4.44. So something tells me that 0.76 or that 0.82 actually, it's down a little since he got to Houston, since he's pitched two.
That's the lack of the vaccine flowing through his veins.
Oh, no.
Everybody else has just slowed down. No. Actually, not probably 42% of Major League Baseball, or something like that. But the other piece, though, that I think people have a hard time with is both on the team level and on the fan level, is we expect things to be linear. And in baseball in particular, things are not linear. The Mariners being within semi-striking distance of a wild card spot this season does not guarantee that they're going to be within striking distance or better next season. And that, to me, is the biggest thing that I feel like it's almost worth it, given how long it's been since the Mariners have been to the playoffs, for them to sell out on this particular season, because they managed to...
What is there to sell out on? Their playoff odds are 3% at this point. Like, what? Just because you're
playoff
close
odds
in
are
the standings.
Because of the roster and the run differential. But...
Well, the roster is what produces the run differential. I hate to break it to you.
But I'm saying it could be better if they had traded for other players. Like, you gotta, if you get to August and you're within
striking distance of the playoffs. Sure, if they had, if they had signed Carmelo Anthony and Wayne Ellington and Trevor Ariza and Dwight Howard, maybe it would have helped them the rest of the season. It still wouldn't be enough for them to make the playoffs. Like,
you don't think
you got close.
ESPN's Kevin Pelton doesn't think the Lakers are going to make the playoffs.
I think the Lakers are going to make the playoffs.
Is that what you're telling me right now?
I want to be very clear about that. The Lakers will very likely make the playoffs.
But there's no guarantee that they won't beat 15 games. I'm saying you've been gifted this record with this run differential at this point. You might as well try to use it. Because next year, you could have the same run differential. In fact, they are very likely to have the same run differential, and they would be 15 games under 500, or whatever they should be.
I mean, they'll probably have a better run differential, but be under 500.
And still be many games under 500. Does that make sense? So if you get lucky, you try to maximize those opportunities based upon the luck.
They're still not close enough. Like, just because they're in the standings, like, they're... There's other teams that, the Yankees are going to be able to load up a lot better than the Mariners can every single time. So. Yes, the Yankees did.
Well, good for them. But the other piece is that, well, they're not in the same league.
They do not affect the Mariners' wild card chances, I agree.
The other piece, I was in LA last week. I'm a Dodgers fan.
Wow.
It was actually kind of incredible how little the world that I'm in sports matter to it. Like, sports matter in the sense of, like, yeah, maybe go to Dodgers game. It doesn't matter who's on the Dodgers or anybody knows. It's like the Lakers traded for Russell Westbrook while he was there. Not once did I hear a person bring it up. But I was like ready. I was ready to have Russ conversations. Back to LA, I was kind of excited about it. No one cared. But do you understand what I'm saying, though? That if you've gotten lucky this far into the season...
Think of how much better you have to get to be good enough to actually win the wild card. If you're at 3% right now.
It's three games, though. It's 3%, but it's also three games.
But you have to... Like, those other teams are so much better than you on paper. And it's not like you just have to be as good as them on average. You have to be substantially better than them, because you still have to make up those three games. Like, it's It's small, but it's not that small.
The other piece about baseball that I think is hard, I've been trying to formulate this take, I've been working on it, is I think that the capitalism is more center in baseball than it is almost any other sport that we pay attention to, especially because we are not following international soccer that much, because that's the places that you really see these massive differences in salary between the teams.
Club soccer. I mean, following international
club soccer in, but I'm saying internationally outside of the US. Yes. MLS, most clubs are relatively similar money that they're spending, right? And in most sports, in the NFL, most teams, if a team is bad, they are almost always bad because they're run incompetently or because they haven't gotten lucky and found a quarterback.
Right.
In baseball, the teams are almost always bad because they're not spending as much money as somebody else. And
it's
think
almost that, like, baseball doesn't have a salary cap. If I didn't know better.
For the Mariners, I'm saying the capitalism, it's all capitalism. The whole fucking, all of sport or whatever. The whole thing is just to profit from, right? Like, that's it. Everything points back to teams profiting. That's why all of this stupid bullshit that we pay attention to exists. But in baseball, you can feel it more than anywhere else.
Sure.
And I think that's part of what makes it a less interesting sport. In fact, I think the lack of a salary cap has made baseball a less interesting sport long term. It's also partially just because prospects don't get to the majors as fast as they would in another sport or something like that. But this disparity, like, the Mariners are having a phenomenal season. They may not make the playoffs, but they have people engaged. Where is their salary rank? And are they selling tickets to the extent that a team can sell tickets? Yes. The Mariners are having the best possible season a team could have because being good and paying a low salary is literally
good.
The perfect.
Why do you keep saying they're good?
They are
being okay.
People are engaged, though. That's the thing.
Are they?
Yes. When was the last time anybody talked about the Mariners at the trade deadline?
Let me see what the Mariners' attendance is. I do not think it is what
you
think. You
can't compare these attendances apples to apples, though.
What else am I supposed to compare to gauge fan interest?
Vibes. You don't think that fan interest is higher this year than it's been?
Sure, it's higher than it's been, but it was really low before. They're 9th out of 15 teams in the AL in total attendance.
But the much more restrictive with regards to capacity.
Are they?
Well, in Washington State early in the season, I feel like they were. Is that not true?
Maybe true to some extent. I mean, it depends what your comparison is.
The AL, like, also includes teams in Texas.
Well, yeah. I don't even know if the Texas team is ahead of them.
And also includes teams in Florida.
I'm quite certain that the team in Florida is not ahead of them. And they are not. They're averaging 8,000 per game. Well, Texas is in fact quite high because of the fact that they were able to have a full crowd from the start of the season.
Totally open. No restrictions. That's it.
Yes. The Mariners currently 22nd in per game attendance in baseball, behind some of those noted really wide open places is the San Francisco Giants, the Los Angeles Angels.
I mean, these are massive markets.
Chicago White Sox.
LA and San Francisco. It's like, you know, Chicago, LA, New York. You're naming the biggest markets in the country. These are aggregate capacities, right? These are not capacity.
You think there's not enough people in the city of Seattle for us to get more than 12,000 people to a game?
I don't know if it's 12,000 people.
I mean, obviously, again, that does include the restricted capacity.
You're comparing the market size of Seattle to San Francisco and LA, though?
Let's look at their most recent homestand. 18,900 against Houston. 18,900 against Houston. 15,100 against Houston.
That's more than 12. All three are more than 12.
I think they'd be drawing more than that if they were a better team.
I guess so.
All right, we've talked way too much about the Mariners.
I just, oh yeah, Chicago. It's like, the four biggest markets in the entire country.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this. They have two teams in many of those markets. They split the fan base. Mariners aren't competing against a team.
They actually have two,
in
two
like
teams in
Ballard.
Every single one of those markets.
Yeah. I don't think the White Sox are getting all of the city of Chicago, all of the metropolitan area there. I'm pretty sure they're not.
I told you that there should be a baseball, or I think I said there should be a basketball team in Tacoma.
You did, yes.
Fuck it, baseball too.
Do you know which side of the city the Chicago White Sox play on?
The Chicago White Sox play on the south side, of course.
There you go. Okay, he does know some
kidding
geography.
Me? That's the only thing I know.
Let's talk about the slumping Sounders, who suffered a 1-0 loss last Saturday versus the San Jose Earthquakes, and then a 1-1 draw earlier Wednesday against FC Dallas in a match I attended after getting Mr. Chicken. Sounders, entering Wednesday, had lost 3 of 4 since their record 13-match unbeaten streak. Two of those losses coming at home. Shane O'Neill and Alex Rodian returned to the starting 11 last Saturday, and Will Bruin returned as a reserve, but Brad Smith sat out due to a hamstring strain. The Earthquakes' goal in the first half came largely against the run in play, but the Sounders couldn't finish their opportunities in the first half and were largely unimpressive in the second half, where they appeared to have given up a second goal late before VAR overturned a Chris Wondolowski goal due to the ball being out of bounds beforehand. On Wednesday night, they pretty much dominated against FC Dallas. Similar inability to finish a number of opportunities in the first half, and finally get a goal in the second half, a Freddie Montero header off of a set piece. And it looks like there's going to be 3 points heading into the 89th minute, leading 1-0. And FC Dallas manages to equalize with Sounders own goal and send us all home extremely disappointed.
Oh.
So the good news from that one is the continued return to health. Brad Smith did come back to play off the bench, and this one provided a bit of a spark at left back. And very exciting, for the first time this season, we saw Nico Ladero back from his knee surgery, played the final, you know, approximately 10 minutes of this one, as Sounders definitely easing him back in his first action of the year, but did have a great ball that set up an opportunity for Raul Diaz in the box. Raul Diaz went down in the box. No call, no VAR to take a look at it. So an opportunity lost there for the Sounders to get points. They now have dropped into a tie for first in the Western Conference with Sporting Kansas City on 33 points. But Sporting Kansas City still has that match in hand. And a couple of teams in the rearview mirror right now, the LA Galaxy, and let's see, who's the other team here that's just behind them in the standings? It is the Colorado Rapids. They're at 1 point, Galaxy at 1.82 points per match, Rapids at 1.8 points per match, Sounders at 1.83. So those are the top four who have really separated themselves in the West. No one else above 1.44 points per match. But the Sounders, who were comfortably ahead in the West most of the year, suddenly facing a bit of a challenge. They will get a break here from MLS play for a little bit. The weekend off, and then on Tuesday they take on Tigres.
Hello.
In the opener of the League's Cup. That one will be at 7 p.m. on ESPN2.
Where is so that taking place?
That's at Lumen Field.
There we go.
Oil Rain got a 2-0 win.
That's
Saturday.
All you have to say about the Sounders?
Well,
there's no context. I'm telling you right now.
This is some context.
This is it. You cannot have a perfect season in MLS. And
no, you definitely can't do that.
We knew we were dancing with the devil at the beginning of the season. It wasn't going to happen. The Sounders cannot start well and finish well.
Well, they've still got time to finish well. They've still got there's a lot left in the MLS regular season. Someone next to us, I was with Chris Smith at the game, and thanks to him for the ticket. And someone next to us was like, yeah, I think the playoffs are starting soon. I think this is the last home game of the regular season. I was like, oh, do you have another thing coming?
Excuse me, sir. It is a very long MLS season.
I have a couple inaccuracies that I restrain myself from correcting.
It's always tough. Always tough.
Yeah, so I think there's still a chance for them to start well and finish well, but they're not going to be so hot necessarily in the middle, it turns out.
This is what a Sounders season looks like. Maybe it's what an every season looks like.
They, you know, they, if we,
They're going to fade. This is not the bottom. We have not hit rock bottom yet. This is not, oh my God, what's the VH1? Behind the Music, right? Behind the Music has not happened. Leif Erikson is not here. The Sounders will go farther. Being tied for first in MLS and still
in the Western Conference.
In the Western Conference. So they're not in MLS at all.
They are in MLS still. New England is comfortably ahead in the Supporters Shield race, the only team in MLS averaging more than 2 points per match.
So they likely will not get the Supporters Shield.
It seems unlikely at this point, yes. So
it's a tough thing to do, and it's a tough thing to keep up for a full season.
The Calvary's coming back. I mean, getting a healthy Nico Ladero is just going to be a huge boost for this team. Obviously, the Roldans are back from the Gold Cup. And we forgot to mention, I should have put this in the toast, to Christian Roldan for being part of the USMNT squad that won the Gold Cup on Sunday.
Oh my God, this was another... I just said this is a bone to pick that I have with you. Were you watching the match on Sunday?
I completely forgot it was happening because I was moving. God.
That was my bone to pick. Was I need people to tell me when things are happening.
I was not aware of it until I went to go pick up food. I went to a crawfish house in White Center, as I posted on Instagram, which was a great decision. And they had the post match show on there. Yeah, it was long over. The game started at like 6.
Well, I don't know what time you're eating crawfish.
No, it was like 9.
Okay. Well, anyway. All right, I take it back. If you forgot also, that's fine. But I need people to remind me, especially international soccer. I need just somebody to be like, hey, this is on. Turn it on.
538's SPI projections now giving the Sounders a 6% chance of winning the Supporters Shield and just an 18% chance of clinching the lone first-round bye in the Western Conference.
You would probably say they should blow it up, not even play for the rest of the year.
I would not say that. Say, let's get Nico Ladero back. In a full role. OL Reign 2-0 win Saturday versus Racing Louisville. Eugenie Lois-Sommer scored twice to open her Reign account in the win over the expansion side. Back home this weekend, hosting the Houston Dash, Megan Rapinoe and Rose Lavelle will play for bronze probably by the time you've listened to this, because I think it's overnight on Pacific time, with the U.S. women's national team against Australia after being upset by Canada 1-0 in the semifinals in the Olympics.
Ugh, Canada.
U.S. women's national team on the basketball side still alive, heading into a semifinal matchup against Serbia tomorrow night Pacific time. Huge performance by Brianna Stewart in their win in the quarterfinals against Australia to knock out Ezzy Magbegor, Stephanie Talbot and company. After Australia got the exhibition win against the U.S. in Las Vegas before heading over to Tokyo, really disappointing performance for them in Tokyo. They lost twice in the group stages, needed to win their final game by at least 24 points, and I think they won by 25. They just barely got there to qualify as the eighth team in the medal rounds, and then were basically out of it from the start against the U.S. in that quarterfinal matchup. Tough night for Ezzy Magbegor, who had a great tournament overall, scored 20 points at one point, was one Australia's, I think, leading scorer, but just 4 points against the U.S. in that one. And Brianna Stewart was awesome. Her best performance of the tournament by far. She actually got a chance to rest because she had averaged 36 out of the 40 minutes per game in the three games in the group stages, which is very unusual for USA women's basketball or USA men's basketball for that matter. Although Kevin Durant has been playing a similar amount, I would say, aside from foul trouble.
Who's toasting Australia now?
Well, we are not. We are going to toast to the USA team. We'll adopt whoever wins that one.
What's going on in that Australia US men's game right now?
US completely dominated the second half, one going away.
Okay.
Kevin Durant is very good at basketball.
I'm just like, a lot of the problems that people had with this team, a lot of the complaints are just like, we're going to forget about them. We'll also forget about them because literally no one cares.
Many people care.
We care in the like,
in the moment, during the, what's the term? Oh, the fortnight.
During the fortnight. We care during the fortnight, and I feel like we care conceptually, right? We care because of conversations about what it means more than anybody, like the feeling that you have inside of you when you watch sports about a team you care about. Nobody feels that shit about the USA men's basketball team. I'm sorry. No.
Of course. Yeah.
That is the description of not caring.
That's the description of being casual. Not caring doesn't mean you, it means you're not interested in it at all. That's just being casual.
Okay. 100% casual fans.
So anyway,
100% intense takes.
Wow. USA women versus Serbia coming up on Thursday night. Men's gold medal game will be on Friday night. Women's gold medal game will be on Saturday night if USA advances. It will be on Saturday night either way, I guess.
Who's the men's gold medal game against?
That is still to be determined overnight. Slovenia takes on France.
Slovenia?
Yeah, Luka Doncic.
Okay, he's Slovenian.
Yeah, they never lost with Luka Doncic. Undefeated.
This is something that we could care about, though, is Luka versus the USC.
Oh, it'd be great fun if that were it. I mean, France beat them at the start of the tournament, so that would be a good matchup. It has beat them in the last knock. Knocked them out of the 2018 World Cup.
Again, this is from like watching it and enjoying yourself perspective. Seeing Evan Fournier beat the U.S. is not that fun, right? Like, it's like, whatever. Yes, okay, Evan Fournier beat the U.S. Gobert. But like, Luka going head-to-head with the U.S. team and winning, that would be a thing to watch.
Well, I mean, it's so much more of a one-man team built around Luka Doncic than France, which has many NBA players. Slovenia does have other NBA players on the roster, but not many, with Goran Dragic not participating this year. The only Dragic there is Zoran Dragic, which definitely, I think we've made this joke, maybe you've made this joke on the Pelton Guest before, sounds like Larry Fernandez.
Zoran, this is his brother or no?
Yes, of course.
Goran and Zoran Dragic.
Zoran did play briefly in the NBA. All right, let's wrap up with football. Training camp approaching for the Washington Huskies. Pac-12 Media Day was last Tuesday, and we learned at that according to Jimmy Lake, roughly 95% of UW players have initiated the vaccination process. Staff 100% vaccinated.
There we go.
Yeah, I mean, this is a program that knows what it's doing. And has a head coach who is vaccinated and able to attend the Media Day in person.
Most of the Pac-12.
Yeah, that does apply to the vast
majority. At least covered that much.
That is a low bar to reach, Al Grant.
This is great, though. And again, this is what we have done in the city of Seattle with regards to football. I guess we'll talk about it more with Pete Carroll. But this is what Win Forever really means.
Yeah. This is leadership. This is coaching.
It's actual leadership. And actual coaching is getting players.
The players have to buy in. I mean, we've seen other coaches speak passionately on this topic. Ron Rivera, Mike Zimmer, whose teams have not responded in the same way as the Huskies and the Seahawks.
Yeah. So. I think there's a lot more. Obviously, the location matters and things like that do matter. But, you know, both of these teams have players who are coming from throughout the country. And you have to be impressed with these coaches no matter what.
And the veteran leaders, as we've mentioned, Russell Wilson's leadership. It's a little less clear who that is on the Huskies necessarily, but Wilson in particular in a leadership role with the Seahawks.
But people want to bitch and moan about not putting a fence around the state or whatever, and star players going to other places. And it's like, Jimmy Lake is guiding young people's lives here. This is about more than, you know, he's making sure that people are going to be safe and healthy throughout this football season and for the rest of their lives, because it's still something that we don't know long-term effects of what's going to happen. We might look back in 100 years, we'll all be dead, but like, we might look back in 100 years and be like, there was a generation of people who they didn't die in the moment but died 30 years earlier than they should have because of the long-term fallouts from COVID, whatever. Like, there are things that we don't know about this that it's important to have young people be aware of, you know. And I think Jimmy Lake in particular, getting this group of kids to 95% is pretty impressive. So,
and it's just such a different feeling about this college football season. Obviously, there's still myriad problems with college football, Getting a vaccine hasn't solved all of them, or NIL reform, but as opposed to last year where there was the terror of, you know, are these kids going to be able to stay healthy playing football?
And I mean, at this time last year, the Pac-12 was announcing they weren't going to have a season pretty soon. And, and last season's, the last college football season was a total farce. Like, we all know it. You know, everybody knows that the NFL season was whatever. They managed to handle it. But like,
we're claiming a national championship, actually, because we were going to play for the Pac-12 championship. And yeah.
Absolutely.
You never know what would happen.
The whole college football season was a complete farce last season. And I don't think you can say quite the same about this one.
No. No, definitely not.
Or as much as you can any college football season. They're all equally.
The Seahawks have started training camp, started it last Wednesday. And the news there from Pete Carroll that 90 of 91 Seahawks players have initiated the vaccine process.
This is what I'm talking about. This is not your 95%, Jimmy Lake. This is let the fucking witch hunt begin. There's one player still holding out. I guess I'm almost impressed that they're able, that one player is able to hold out. But who is it?
I P. Carroll said that that player has their reasons. So,
but the level of safety for the team, and when you talk about, so this was something that I understand with the NFL protocols, was they won't reschedule games if time is missed because of unvaccinated players. However, or is it just in general?
They said that that if the game had to be canceled, you would forfeit it.
If it was because of unvaccinated players,
they didn't say anything about not rescheduling.
But is there a distinction between vaccinated players and not vaccinated players?
Yes.
I think this is an important thing. And so if there is only one player on the team, it's
and the NFL numbers
so
now,
isolated.
The NFL numbers now are very good overall.
And good, like 90%. There's been a lot of judgment. I can't remember who the player was who I saw posting at this just being like, NFL players are probably being judged too harshly for this when you're looking at it vis-a-vis
way ahead of the population.
Yeah, the population in general. Like, we should be impressed by NFL players that were at this percentage. And I do think that there are players who were maybe outspoken with some perspectives that I don't personally agree with. And I don't think are safe perspectives to exist in society. But we don't just need to promote the wrong perspectives. We should focus on how much institutional bullying works. And that's the truth of the situation.
Let's not use the word bullying.
Institutional mandates. Or
there we go. That's a good one.
But these things work. And because to me, the main issue here is not even necessarily quote unquote anti-vaxxers, right? I personally feel like anti-vaxxers probably make up a very small percentage of the population and get a disproportionate amount of attention within media. I think it's more about reaching the indifferent. And
right.
I think that's what this does, is if you're going to have the NFL doesn't have a mandate, but they have a bullying process, right?
Let's not use that term.
They have a process of, you could potentially cost your team a game by not being vaccinated, which
is consequences.
Consequences. You could, how about that? Instead of bullying, we'll say consequences. You could take an indifferent person and get them to do something that they necessarily wouldn't have done. They wouldn't have necessarily done.
There's a freedom of choice in this country over whether to get vaccinated, but there's not a freedom from consequences, which is what I think a lot of people who talk about freedom miss. Freedom does not mean freedom from consequences. And we've seen consequences with NFL coaches who are not part of staffs because they chose not to get vaccinated. And we're going to see consequences for players who have chosen not to get vaccinated. And I think that's, you know, the appropriate way to handle it at this point.
Drummers for the Offspring.
I don't get this reference. Sadly.
The drummer for the Offspring got kicked out of the band because he wouldn't get vaccinated.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It's not that much to understand. Get this. Do you need me to explain who the Offspring are?
We'd be here all night. So no holdouts for the Seahawks, or just the one vaccine holdout. But
yeah,
a couple of two hold-ins for the Seahawks so far, with both Jamal Adams and Dwayne Brown not practicing thus far as they await potential contract extensions.
I don't want anybody to practice.
That is an aggressive take.
Especially not Dwayne Brown. You want Dwayne Brown out there?
Probably at least a little bit. I think we do know that continuity is an important factor
of offensive line success. Walk through, maybe. Look, Dwayne Brown's going to be able to block people.
Yes, I am not worried about Dwayne Brown.
But at Dwayne Brown's age, he doesn't need the reps. You don't need him out there. Only bad can come from that.
I don't think it's that far.
You know how many years didn't Walt Jones like hold out a lot of training camps?
But not all of the training camps. I don't think he did in 2005, for example. Like, yeah, there was at one point he signed a long-term extension and stopped holding out.
Ah, big mistake. Hold-ins.
It was, in fact, in 2005 that he signed that 7-year contract. So,
and
there you go.
So he was at practice?
Yes. That was the reason.
Okay,
that was not the reason. Dwayne Eskridge.
Ben Burkervin.
What? I don't get it.
Is he the one?
Stop going through the roster one by one. Dwayne Eskridge has been on the PUP list due to a foot issue, or the toe issue, I should say, that has sidelined him thus far since he was drafted in the second round by the Seahawks, along with Travis Homer. Pete Carroll did say Tuesday that the Seahawks had Wednesday.
You made that
say.
Sound like he was drafted in the second round, and also Travis Homer was drafted in the second round.
That was not my
even
intent.
The Seahawks would not draft Travis Homer in the second round.
Pete Carroll said Wednesday that Seahawks staff has found a shoe solution to allow Eskridge to run without pain, so it certainly would be good to get him involved in practice, even though Tristan doesn't want anyone to practice. I disagree. Seahawks making a roster move signed quarterback Sean Mannion.
Hello.
Longtime Oregon State star.
Love it.
And waived Danny Etling. Mannion played his first 4 seasons with the Rams, including 2 with Shane Waldron, the Seahawks' new offensive coordinator, on the coaching staff in LA under Sean McVay there. Most recently was with the Minnesota Vikings. Carroll did say, not really competing with Geno Smith for the backup job. This is more about the kind of emergency third quarterback position for the Seahawks, where they also have, I believe, still a... is Alex Magoo still part of the mix here?
I think it's been multiple years.
Who is the other person who's part of the mix then?
It wasn't Magoo. It was somebody else.
This is what happens when I do this on the fly.
You don't pay attention to football.
Having sufficient notes. Yeah, no, it's Alex Magoo.
Still Magoo?
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, it's not still. Like, he left and then he came back.
Wow, he spread his wings and then returned.
Yeah. Well. Mr. Magoo.
I will say with Sean Mannion, just give me a Pac-12 quarterback. We're good. As long as it's not Jared Goff. Like,
you wouldn't take Jared Goff backup quarterback?
I would love Jared Goff as the backup quarterback.
If Jared Goff's available for the minimum every day of the week.
Yeah.
Twice on Sundays.
Give me a vaccinated Jake who can get in there, take some reps.
Let's go. Love to see it. Well, the other thing I didn't put in the notes that we should talk about is the Carson Wentz foot surgery, which is very interesting for the team facing the Colts in week 1, which happens to be your Seattle Seahawks.
Well, and the Quentin Nelson injury as well.
Yes. Only one of those potentially means Jacob Eason starting week 1. I don't think there's any chance of it happening. I think they will definitely trade for a veteran quarterback.
I don't think they're trading for a veteran quarterback. They might.
I've seen NFL teams before. Is Josh McCown still playing? Has he retired?
Oh, no.
You saw that Josh Johnson got signed the other day, right?
I love Josh Johnson. The thing is, I don't know if Carson Wentz is going to be out for that long. And the other thing is that people aren't factoring into this is that this is a net positive for the Colts. Have we seen Carson Wentz play football, people? Like, stop acting like just because he's starting quarterback means that Carson Wentz is good. How many times do the Seahawks need to beat Carson Wentz for people to understand the situation?
Well, one time they didn't beat Carson Wentz, as it turned out, because unfortunately he had to leave that game due to injury, and they did beat Josh McCown.
They beat somebody. Like, the...
Also, I looked up Josh Johnson. Josh Johnson has not played for the Seahawks, but the Seahawks currently have a Josh Johnson.
Really?
He's a running back.
Oh.
Did not know that.
I just love the idea that they don't have Carson Wentz. Therefore, they need to go out and get a starting quarterback. And I'm like, well, they already didn't have a starting quarterback. So what's the difference?
They've committed substantially to Carson Wentz. So I think they have a starting quarterback, even if they don't have a starting quarterback.
Yeah, Jacob Eason.
We'll see. I guess Josh McCown has not announced it. I feel like I saw a Josh McCown retirement announcement, but his Wikipedia is not reflecting it.
Holding on hope.
Okay, though he did announce his NFL retirement.
I think getting Dwayne Eskridge out there, though, is going to be pretty important. Like, if we could come back to the Seahawks from the Colts for a second here.
Oh, he's Josh McCown is my colleague at ESPN now, my coworker.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that's really nice to see.
Maybe we'll see him in Bristol someday.
Yeah, around the water cooler. Yeah. I think Dwayne Eskridge, though, getting Dwayne Eskridge out there, I think is something it's the most disappointing part of training camp so far.
I mean, the knock on wood, you haven't seen other players go down with injuries, so that's been very exciting.
I'm not sure if I'm buying this shoe fix type situation. Like, is that the issue? I don't understand. Like, is he's able to run, or is he able to practice, or is he just able to run outside of practice? What does this mean?
I took the implication to mean that he will be able to practice.
That was it. It was just
some point here. No, I don't know that it was a shoe issue, but the shoe could be exacerbating the situation or prolonging the situation.
I'm just going to throw this out there. I have never once heard of this being the case. And do I think that Dwayne Eskridge is going to be the one ever time?
You see it with plantar fasciitis pretty commonly, where shoes are an issue. I don't know about toes specifically, but the causal mechanism seems logical to me.
Okay.
But I'm not a doctor.
I mean, that would be great. Are we planning on, I think tonight, as this airs, there's going to be a football game.
That is correct. The Hall of Fame game will be played. I'm not ready for this. The Hall of Fame game should not be being played while NBA free agency is still going on.
Well, that's the NBA's fault. The NFL is on schedule. The NBA is the one that's off schedule.
I don't know if I would say that's the NBA's fault, but yes, it is not because of anything the NFL is doing differently. The Dallas Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers, a classic matchup there in the Hall of Fame game.
You'll love to see it. We hit the month of August before anybody wanted to hit the month of August.
Yes.
I feel like society was blissfully unaware back in July. Maybe this is just me speaking my own personal experience. I love July. July was far enough away from September that we were kind of able to ignore anything else that was going on. We knew that September was coming. We could be excited and plan for September. However, it still felt ethereal. And August 1st hit, and all of a sudden it was like, September is the next month, you idiot. And it was just like, I don't like this for myself, August. Bands started being like, what are we going to do about touring? Like, this is happening. You're just like, fuck, I didn't want to think about that either. I like the idea and concept of it happening. I love talking about it. I love promoting it being on the internet. But we've all been through some things here for these last couple of years. And now September is just like, hey, motherfucker, this isn't over, but you're going to have to start dealing with it. And I feel like that's what the football season is doing to me personally.
Are you making an announcement here about Peltoncast Live?
No, I'm not. But the Peltoncast Live issues are about venues have not reopened yet. You know, the places that we want to do Peltoncast Live, I'm still feeling very confident about one. But and there will be a venue, but people are having to figure things out now that it's right. August. And yep. I loved being blissfully unaware. I miss July, is what I'm trying to say. And so this first football game starting, really just means it's the end.
Ben B is going to be way too excited about it.
About the football game?
Yeah.
I don't know. Was he excited?
I think I detected a note of excitement.
We're going to have to announce the Fantasy Football League soon.
I got an email about it earlier today.
Did you?
I can't process it until I come back for Summer League. Then I can dive into it, but until I come back from Summer
League.
Are
we cutting down to two leagues? Are you cutting an entire league this year? Didn't you say some sort of crazy things? Hyper-aggressive.
It is my hope that we'll not have as many leagues as we had last season. As we had too many leagues. Although I think our Friends and Family League is disappearing, right? Should we not chuck through this offline?
Did we do it last year?
I think so. I can't remember. Well, unfortunately, you can't always stay July. It is August. But July. That means knockout stages of the PeltonCast search for Seattle's best chicken.
There we go.
Get excited. On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
All right. I feel like there wasn't much awkward silence.
No,